It's another 2019 season preview edition of College Crosscast, and on this episode, we're going to be rolling with part one of our women's lacrosse preview, and we're joined by College Cross's women's insider, Skylar Gilbert. How are you doing, Skylar?
Doing all right. How are you, Ryan?
Doing good, doing good. So we're going to have a two-part series. Next week, we're going to have part two, and we're going to have some guests. So I know... Image-wise, we're always concerned about sometimes having too many guys talking women's lacrosse, but we will have some female voices on our next episode, and we're going to have a little bit more of a fun conversation next week as well. But to kick things off with the season starting this weekend, we're going to do one amongst the two of us. This was a night that worked for us, so we'll get things rolling on the preseason polls and favorites for the Tuareton and the national title. And then next week, we're going to have a little bit more of a state of the game type of podcast with some guests. So be on the lookout for that. And we'll begin this podcast with a look into this year's preseason top 25 in the media poll. It's the Inside Lacrosse Media poll. There's a couple different polls out there, but we'll go with this one. Number one, pretty... not unanimous, but pretty heavily number one is Boston College, the two-time defending runner-up in the NCAA tournament. The Eagles definitely have a stacked team, and we'll talk about them in a little bit, but they're your preseason number one. The Stalwarts in Maryland and UNC are right behind them at 2 and 3. And defending national champion James Madison with 4 first-place votes of their own are at number 4. And then right behind them is your Stony Brook Seawolves at 5. So 2 ACC schools, 1 Big Ten, 1 Colonial, 1 America East, and 1 American Athletic Conference team at 6. That would be Florida. More on some of the conference shuffling in a little bit as well. Florida going from the Big East to the American. Northwestern's at 7, Princeton at 8, Loyola 9, Penn State 10. Outside the top 10, it's Virginia Tech, Penn, Syracuse, Towson, and Navy. Then 16 through 19, there was a tie at 19th amongst two teams, and that would be Virginia, Stanford, Colorado, Duke, and USC. So you have your own top 20 of your own. But before we get into that, your thoughts on how the media poll shook out?
No big surprises. I think Penn is a little bit low at 12. That's a team that really impressed me last year. They have a couple really young superstars that are just budding, and I think they'll be competitive all year. It was surprising to see where the first place votes went. 15 of them went to Boston College, 1 to Maryland, and then 4 to James Madison. I assume the Florida James Madison is kind of just philosophically people putting them on top. You know, they're the defending champion. They're going to start the year number one. Yeah, some people have that philosophy. One first place vote to Maryland is a little shocking because from everything I've read, everyone I've talked to, and everything I know about the game and observed, Boston College, talent-wise, especially with the return of Kenzie Kemp this year, is easily the team to beat. They've been the national runners-up the last two seasons. And, you know, there's enough competition at the top of the media, at the top of the lacrosse game right now, that they can certainly be usurped. I mean, we saw Stony Brook with Kylie O'Miller and Courtney Murphy be upset last year. There have been more upsets in recent years in women's lacrosse. But certainly if you were to peg one team that's likely to win it all, you would go with the Eagles. But beyond that, I might swap. I actually think I do have Maryland and North Carolina swapped.
Yeah, so let's go into your top 20, the Skylar top 20.
All right, I mean, I'll start at the bottom. Number 20 and number 19... I have Georgetown at 20 and Denver at 19. And I think, I believe Georgetown wasn't even in the top 20. of the media poll. Yeah, I mean, they received votes. Yeah, actually, both those teams received votes, but I have them in my top 20. And it's an interesting dynamic with the initiation, the startup of this American Athletic Conference joining women's lacrosse. They pulled about six teams from the Big East, including Florida, including East Carolina, Cincinnati, some of these other teams. And now at the top of the Big East, you know, for the last 4 years, it's been Florida going undefeated in conference play and winning the conference tournament without hardly a fight. And now it's going to be really interesting. And with these two teams, Georgetown and Denver, Georgetown has the returning leading scorer from last year, Taylor Gebhardt, coming back. They have Natalia Lynch, a couple Long Island girls. And as far as Denver goes, Quentin Hoke Bullen was their top scorer last year. She was just a freshman. So both these teams are returning their best players. And, yeah, I mean, I have them 19 and 20. I don't think they're really national contenders. But I think the Big East will get two NCAA teams this year, and it'll be those two. You can also throw in Marquette, who I think, if I extend my poll down to 30, they would probably be in my poll. So Marquette might turn some heads and compete in the Big East. But certainly without Florida there anymore, it's given these new teams some, or these other teams, I should say, some life in that conference. So I have Georgetown number 20. I have Denver number 19. And then number 18, I have the Virginia Cavaliers. And I'm a little bit lower on them than the IL poll. But they've always been a solid team in the ACC. Obviously, the men's team is getting a lot of hype this year with the two really strong players that they have. But Virginia, it's funny, with the rise of JMU and the rise of Virginia Tech, within that state, the Cavaliers are becoming almost the third best team in that state, which they've never really been before. They'll have a strong team, but again, they went 10-10 last year. They were kind of middle of the pack. As far as ACC teams go, I think they'll be toward the bottom of that conference. But the ACC is such a strong conference that, across the grand scheme of things, they'll be they should still make the NCAA tournament. So those are my bottom three teams of the top 20. And then I have a Patriot League team. I've got Navy, the Midshipmen, and Navy. It's an interesting time for Navy women's lacrosse, where the two Collins sisters, Julia and I can't believe I'm doing this right now.
Oh dear.
Julia and Jenna Collins, they had combined for over 300 points apiece over their careers at Navy. They just graduated last year, so it's kind of turning over a new leaf in Navy lacrosse. And Kelly Larkin, who was a sophomore last year, she was in the top 10 in scoring, and she's actually the top scorer among all juniors in the country based on what she's done in her career. It's really going to be Kelly Larkin's team right now, and she's a fantastic player. She's probably going to end up as the Patriot League Player of the Year, and it's just a matter of how much she can carry this team kind of on her own, and we'll see what other faces emerge from this season. But for so long, Navy has been a consistent force in the NCAA. I know 2 years ago they made a Final Four, but without the Collins sisters, there's a lot of question marks going into the season for Navy. I got a little bit of gripe on Twitter after my top 19 things to be excited about this season, because at one point in that article it said Loyola is a heavy favorite in the Patriot League and should have no problem going past Navy. There were some people that were like, well, let's give Navy some credit. They're an established, strong program, and Kelly Larkin is certainly a superstar. So we'll see what Navy can do this year. I have them number 17. And then I have Colorado at 16. They're my only Pac-12 team that I ranked. The Pac-12, they have 1-3 teams making the NCAA tournament, I think, this year. You got to throw Stanford and USC in there, too. By Colorado 16, they have Julia LaCella, who is the preseason All-American. Last year, she was the goalkeeper of the year, and all of NCAA women's lacrosse. So it's always an advantage when you can say you have the best goalie in the country backing you up. Yeah, and that offensive end, I think Colorado, there's going to be some question marks there because Darby Kiernan, the top scorer in team history, she graduated last year. A fantastic player both on the draw circle, on the offensive end. So whenever you have your star player getting replaced, it's going to be next man up. We're going to see if Colorado can recover from that. Number 15, I have another ACC school. I think I have six ACC teams in my top 20. But at number 15, I have the Duke Blue Devils, who I know the Iowa poll had Duke at 19. Yeah, looking at these Duke Blue Devils, I have them at number 15 in my poll. They went 8-9 last season, which seems like an underwhelming record for a lacrosse school like Duke. But there was a lot of promise in this Duke team, and I think Charlotte North, who was a freshman for them last season, scored 59 goals. She had an 8-goal game in her season, I believe. She's an outstanding talent. Olivia Jenner, one of the best draw players in the country. And her sister, Maddie Jenner, 6'2" incoming freshman, is perhaps even more of a draw talent. I was told by one person that she might be the best draw control prospect ever to come through women's lacrosse. So Maddie Jenner is joining that Duke team. So if you're winning all the possessions like Duke might do this year with that two-headed behemoth Jenner sisters winning all the draws for them, it's going to be tough to beat Duke. You know, if after every single goal you're winning back possession, I mean, we saw how tough Albany would be to beat if TD Ireland was winning 25 out of 27 faceoffs or something like that. And really, this Duke women's team is going to be a lot like that this year, where they might have talent deficiencies on some of the other ACC teams in the midfield and on defense, but they're just going to be monsters getting possession. And I think Charlotte North is going to be one of the best goal scorers in that conference and even in the country.
So before we get further into your top 20, we'll interject a little bit with a little discussion. Looks like you're not as high on the Pac-12 as the poll had seen. Are you? You don't have either Stanford or Southern Cal in your top 20. Do you think they'll make up for it in the regular season, or you just don't see what others are seeing just at the moment out of the conference, and you think they're getting a little bit of the, you know, big name boost out of it?
Yeah, I mean, the Pac-12 all around last year, they had more parity than usual. I think Oregon was a little bit on the up. I think Cal is starting to put decent programs together. Last season was the first year Arizona State had a program, so maybe they'll get more in the mix. But I think at the top of the conference, these Pac-12 teams weren't really as competitive. They didn't win a game in the NCAA tournament. You saw Stanford had a couple bad losses. USC, they took BC to overtime, but then they missed the NCAA tournament. So USC is a bit of an enigma for me, where they have the talent. They certainly can be there in the end of the year. But, yeah, at this point, those two teams you mentioned, Stanford and USC, I'd probably have them just outside my top 20. I don't mean it as any kind of knock on their programs. I just they barely missed the cut for me. Mm-hmm. But certainly both of them have NCAA tournament potential. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I was saying with the Pac-12 could see up to three teams if all three of them have decent non-conferences.
And is there also a sleeper team that you were considering for your top 20 that just missed the cut?
I really like Dartmouth this year. And they're kind of the third team out of the Ivy that's contending this year. I wasn't ready to mention Dartmouth, so I don't have their roster in front of me. But they do very well on the draw. Last season, they almost beat Boston College. That was a really tightly contested game that really challenged Boston College's undefeated record at the time. I think it finished low scoring. It was like 9-7 or something like that. And that's a team where if they could reasonably beat Penn or Princeton in the Ivy Championships and make a run. I have them on the outside just because I want them to prove a little more to me. I want to see what they do at the start of this year before I'm really set in stone that Dartmouth is going to be a contender again. But they haven't made the NCAA tournament in a few years, and last year was really kind of a stepping stone where I think they can contend in the Ivy and in the NCAA in the years to come.
All right, so we'll continue on with your countdown, so take it away.
All right, at number 14, I have my third ACC team on this list is Virginia Tech Hokies. It's another team that doesn't have a men's program, and their women's program was, for a long time, absolutely dreadful. I think for a 10-year span, they won something like 3 ACC games, and then last year, they won 5 ACC games last year alone. So this Hokies team, their head coach, John Sung, has completely turned around that program. I think Paige Petty coming back is their star player. She's one of the best players in the ACC. And besides like a slip up against Colorado last year where they lost pretty badly, Virginia Tech was a dominant team last year, particularly in the non-conference, and really challenged even in conference play with some of the top teams. This is a team that for so long they were the laughingstock of NCAA women's lacrosse, and now they have a real team that can compete. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Virginia Tech can do this year. I know when they played at Boston College last year, they only lost by 2 goals. They had wins against Virginia. Against UNC, they only lost by 1. I mean, they were playing really tight games with elite teams. Had an NCAA tournament win last year against Georgetown, the first in their program history. And it just seems like everything in this program is looking up, up, up. So maybe that can continue in 2019. The ACC is loaded with talent, so it's going to be a challenge. But I have high hopes for Virginia Tech in 2019 and in their future. And then at number 13, my first Big Ten team on the list are the Penn State Nittany Lions. Penn State last year, they made the NCAA tournament only to lose in overtime to Penn. Actually, a game I was at LaBelle Stadium in Stony Brook. And Penn State, they have a lot of returning talent. They have Penn State, you look at their roster coming back, they have Maria Auth, their leading point getter last year, had 54 goals, 17 assists. And then Madison Carter, who is an absolute beast on free position. She had 62 goals and really was a finisher for that team. Katie McDonald is not coming back. They'll have to make up for some of her talent. She was such a reliable midfielder for them for the last 3 or 4 years. But yeah, this Penn State team last year, they went 10-10, but really, if you look at their body of work, they were a better team than their record shows. And I know that they're going to be a force in that Big Ten this year. And then number 12, I have my fourth ACC team, and a team that I'm a lot higher on than the IL poll. I think the IL poll had them at 16 or so. Let me check. Oh, no, I guess I'm only a little bit higher on them. But anyways, yeah. It's a team that I like a lot this year is the Syracuse Orange at 12. And Syracuse is another team. Their finishing record last year was actually under 500 for their women's team. There were question marks of whether they'd even make the NCAA tournament.
There are Syracuse.com commenters aplenty.
Oh, of course. And, you know, Syracuse, they've had so many star players go through that program over the years. And I really think this year, what hurt them last year was the loss of one of their draw specialists, was Morgan Widener, who's a tall, lanky draw specialist from Texas. And in her freshman season, she had one of the best years that any draw specialist has ever had. And she's literally a FOGO, which you don't see a lot in women's lacrosse, where she takes the draw, wins it, runs straight off the field, doesn't play offense or defense. And so just a raw FOGO. And she tore her ACL, I believe, the second game in the season last year for Syracuse. And she's going to be coming back last year. So this year, I mean. So where Syracuse struggled more than usual in the draw circle in getting possessions last year, they'll be able to make up a lot this year in that regard. And they have a lot of returning talent. Emily Howarszczuk was only a sophomore last year. Nicole Levy is going to be a senior this year. And, you know, the ACC is stacked. I know I keep saying that. But Syracuse, I think they and Duke are going to be the two strongest teams in that conference in the face-off circle. And that can definitely propel those teams to upsets over a North Carolina, or if you can somehow shut her down, Sam Abuzo and Boston College. I think Syracuse and Duke, they have the tools to pull some upsets and make some waves in the ACC. Number 11, I'm going back, or I guess it's my first team in the CAA, are the Towson Tigers. Towson was seeded last year in the NCAA tournament. They have one of the best defenders in the country, in Olivia Conti. And for Towson, it's really just a matter of it's them and James Madison, and then you have a little bit of a gap in the CAA when you drop down to the third best team in that conference, which is probably Delaware or Elon. You know, those teams are probably not NCAA tournament teams. They're strong programs, but in the CAA, you're really looking at Towson and
JMU.
And JMU to be the contender. JMU, of course, the defending champions in the NCAA. And Towson, one player, and I saw Towson in person last year at Stony Brook. One player I really like from them is Long Island native Natalie Silmonte. She's just really quick, plays behind the net. She's shifty, kind of plays that X attacker. And the offense seemed to run through her when the team was playing at its best. She had 75 points this year, or last year, and I think she'll even have a bigger role this year. So definitely keep tabs on Towson.
All right, so before we get into your top 10, I noticed you're a little high on Towson, a little low on Penn State.
Am I low on Penn State? I didn't even realize that. And I didn't look at the IL poll when I was putting my own together. But
any of these teams also were in consideration for the top 10?
I guess at this point, I'll go through some dark horses. Like, I know JMU last year in the opening media poll last year, they were number 17. Mm-hmm. So if I were to pick one of these teams to make a deep run, and kind of shock the world this year, I'd probably go Virginia Tech. And I just think the year-to-year growth they've shown over the last three seasons, if they continue to grow at that pace, they can certainly be a national contender and maybe even a Final Four team.
Yeah, I think a little bit of Virginia Tech's rise also kind of mirrors what Boston College has done. You know, it's, you know, make their way, start to win ACC games, have some success in the ACC tournament, and then, you know, start to put things together in the NCAA. So I definitely could see the Hokies having the blueprint, following the blueprint that BC laid out, and, you know, starting to make progress in that end.
Yeah, of course. And the ACC is so tricky. Whenever you have, you know, historically, maybe five of your best 12 teams in the country are all in a conference with you, it doesn't make lacrosse fun, and it makes it hard to recruit, because who wants to play an ACC schedule on a team that has won four or five games year after year after year the way that Virginia Tech did? So, I mean, you look at Virginia Tech, last year they went 14-7 in 2017. They went 11-8, so that was a three-year rise. And then if you go behind that, 2016, they were only 5-13. So in the span of 2 years, they've gone from 5-13 to now being a team that I think is a dark horse to even make the Final Four in women's lacrosse. It's just testament to that program. And Boston College, if you shift back a few years, they're farther along in the process now. But they also had a rise like that in the women's lacrosse world. And, you know, it makes me wonder if programs like Virginia Tech, like Boston College, if they're so strong in women's lacrosse, could it lead to them adding a men's program? You know, obviously there's always Title IX considerations. And it's not the easiest thing in the world to add a men's lacrosse program. But certainly some lacrosse success. And I know in New England, there's an energy around that Boston College team. There were a lot of people coming down from Massachusetts for the Final Four last year. This is a team that, and you're seeing the same thing in Virginia with JMU, with Virginia Tech. The sport's garnering more energy than it has, excuse me, in the past. And,
we're going to get into some of those heavy hitters like BC and JMU now as we head into the top 10 of your poll.
All right. So heading into the top 10, at number 10, I have the Princeton Tigers. And I noticed that both in the coaches' poll and in the IL media poll, they had Princeton above the Penn Quakers. I actually have Penn at 9, so let me do Penn and Princeton together, since they are Ivy League rivals, and they are always, or seemingly always, the top two teams in women's lacrosse in the Ivy League. It can really go either way. I think the winner of that conference is probably going to get a home game in the NCAA tournament, a top 8 seed. Right now I have them 9-10. They're pretty similarly constructed teams, where Princeton's best player last year was Kyla Sears, a freshman, and then Penn's best player last year was Zoe Bellido, a freshman. And between those two teams, those two freshmen just becoming sophomores, with the incredible coaches those two programs have, I think they'll be, and it'll just be Penn and Princeton at the end of the Ivy League. Maybe Dartmouth can surprise them. But it's really just a case of which team's going to come out of the Ivy League. And what was really interesting when I was studying these two teams is Penn, about 60% of their non-free position goals are assisted. For Princeton, it's about 20%. So even though, their roster, they were both young rosters last year and kind of similarly constructed in that regard, stylistically totally different, where Penn is playing this linking passing style kind of similar to Stony Brook. Princeton plays more of an individual, like a Maryland game, where I'm trying to beat the person off the foot or in transition or just out athleticism them. So it's kind of skill versus athleticism. So the Ivy League should come down between the Quakers and the Tigers. I was one of the rare people that had Penn over Princeton. I think just their returning talent, I think it's a little bit deeper on Penn's side. But I had them 9 and 10. And then at number 8, I have the Loyola Greyhounds, my Patriot League favorite. And I think with Libby Rosenzweig, had one of the best years among any sophomore in the country last year for Loyola. They're always a tough team to beat in the Patriot League. It's going to be them and Navy and then maybe Lehigh. But Loyola is always in the picture. I had to have them in my top 10. And, you know, there's a lot of buzz about the men's program for Loyola, too. But if there was any team in the country, maybe other than Maryland, that I could see having two Final Four teams in men's and women's lacrosse this year, it would be Loyola. Other than Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. Number seven, I have my second Big Ten team, Northwestern, the Wildcats. They're led by Selena Lasota, who's going to be a senior this year, the Canadian. And this Northwestern team can put up goals like it's no one's business. Selena Lasota, in two games in the NCAA tournament last year, she had something like 20 or 21 points just in the opening weekend in two games. It was absolutely preposterous. There's
Crab Raccoon, no. Things of that nature.
Yeah, it just... I don't know.
I mean, I completely threw you off with that. I'm sorry.
In the NCAA tournament last year, Northwestern, they beat Richmond 24-18. Then they beat Towson 21-17. Against Maryland, it was 20-16. They lost last year against Penn State and then Big Ten tournament. 21-16. They just play these tire fire, really high scoring games, which is a real stark difference from Kelly Almonte's team back when they had the dynasty 10 or so years ago. That was always a really defensive minded team, very low scoring. So it's kind of interesting how different Northwestern women's lacrosse looks today. And I don't know how much of it, I don't know if they're trying to recruit against Maryland, because obviously in the Big Ten, women's lacrosse, everything goes through the Maryland Terrapins.
Mm-hmm.
So I,
before we get into the top six, do you think Northwestern's back at that elite level, or are they the first best of the rest? Do you think?
I don't think I could see them winning the title this year. If that's an answer to the question,
mm-hmm.
I could see them knocking off one of the six teams I have ahead of them and making the Final Four, perhaps. But I don't think I could see them going all the way and winning the title. Let it be known, I would have said exactly the same thing about James Madison this time last year. So I've been wrong before, and I'll be wrong again. But at this point, they've got to show me something for me to consider them a national contender.
All right, but speaking of that national contender, we're going to enter it here with six, right?
Yeah, these top six teams are definitely my six national contenders. Number six, I have James Madison. They lost almost all of their starting lineup, but from what I've heard, they recruited very well. They have, maybe not according to the Inside Lacrosse rankings, did they have one of the best recruiting classes in the country. But it's kind of similar to Stony Brook, where they're getting these players that really fit the system well and can turn into superstars. So anyway, James Madison lost a lot of talent last year, certainly with Kristen Guardian, a Towardin finalist, Elena Romsberg, a 66 goal scorer, Haley Warden, who was a CAA Player of the Year, one of the best on the draw, one of the best, you know, offense, midfield, defense, one of the best three zone players in the country. But Shelly Clasp back home after the magic she pulled last year with that roster, I don't think you can count this James Madison Dukes team out. Hannah Haven's coming back. She had 79 goals last year, or 79 points last year, excuse me. Maddie McDaniel, I think, is one of the players that I'd look to have a big year. Katie Tchaikovsky, Charlotte Haggerty, and as well as some of these freshmen. I mean, I've heard strong things about Casey Noblock from New Jersey. These under-the-radar freshmen at James Madison, it's kind of the theme of their program. The chip on the shoulder, going to battle as David against Goliath. You know, James Madison, everyone on that team knew the narrative of they weren't supposed to win the national title last year, and nobody knew who any of them were. And they did it anyway, because they worked as a team, they fit well together, and Shelly Clasp back home is a fantastic coach, and their zone defense was one of the best in the country. And whenever you have a system like that, they're going to continue to contend, even when you lose a lot of players. So I have the defending champions at number 6. And then heading into the top 5, number 5, I have the Florida Gators. And the Gators, you mentioned at the top of the program, they are moving from the Big East this year to the AAC. The American, it was the inaugural season of women's lacrosse in the American. And it'll be interesting to see how that kind of shifts the landscape of women's lacrosse. This league is going to have Cincinnati, Connecticut, ECU, Temple, Florida, and Vanderbilt. And it's strange to say because Florida really dominated the Big East, but I think they're going to dominate this conference even more. I can't really see Temple or Connecticut, maybe, but I think they're going to breeze through that conference and head straight into the NCAA tournament. They have a very tricky non-conference schedule. They have games against North Carolina, Maryland, and Stony Brook on their non-conference schedule, as well as Syracuse, Loyola, Navy, Colorado. A lot of ranked teams on that schedule. And looking at this roster, there's a lot of players. Certainly Lindsay Ronback, leading scorer from a season ago. The Preka sisters are gone at this point. No, they still have Sydney Preka. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But Shannon Kavanaugh is a player I like in the midfield. They pull a lot from Long Island, where you have Ronback, you have Kavanaugh, you have Pareka, all come from New York, going down to Florida. And it's a team that didn't make the Final Four last season, and I know Florida in recent years, that has been their standard, so they'll have a chip on their shoulder trying to get back to the Final Four and maybe bring home the first national title in program history. Now, going into my top 4, number 4, I have Stony Brook. And the Seawolves, I know this team like the back of my hand, but a lot of people, you know, you might assume you're losing Kylie O'Miller, you're losing Courtney Murphy. Kylie O'Miller has the NCAA record for points in a career or points in a single season. Courtney Murphy had the NCAA record for goals in a career, goals in a single season. So when you're losing those two players, as well as Brooke Gubatosi, an All-American defender, you might think, well, how the heck can you have them in your top 4? This was a Stony Brook team that shattered almost every statistical record last year on the offensive end. Taryn O'Miller tore her ACL late in the year, and they lost in overtime to Boston College, spurred in large part by a large deficit in the draw circle department, where Boston College won triple the draw as Stony Brook did. And even though the Seawolves were operating in a better offensive efficiency, they couldn't make up the deficit. But the Stony Brook team, Taryn O'Miller is going to be coming back from her ACL surgery. And fun fact about Taryn O'Miller is through her sophomore season, she actually has more career points than Kylie O'Miller had through her sophomore season. So they might not miss Kylie that much, as ludicrous as that is to say, because they have another O'Miller, and Taryn O'Miller has certainly shown that she can lead a team. Allie Kennedy in the midfield is one of those players that's going to turn some heads this year for Stony Brook. I think she might be the very best midfielder in the country. Just the speed that she plays the game, the transition ability she has, on offense, on defense, just ground balls, draw controls, goals, assists. She does everything. Spillane told me that she's the best midfielder he's ever coached. And if you look at some of the names that have gone through the Stony Brook program, through the national title winning Adelphi programs in D2 that he had, that's really saying something. So behind Taryn O'Miller and Allie Kenny, Stony Brook is again going to be a force. They'll likely breeze through the America East. It all really depends on how they do in their non-conference, and what their RPI is at the end of the year, whether they get a favorable seeding or not. I know that's been a point of contention in the past for a lot of Stony Brook fans. And then the top three. Number three, I have Maryland. And Maryland is, it's kind of funny how Maryland is a little bit off people's radar right now, and a little bit too quiet for that
Maryland. Counting out touchdown Kathy Reese.
I know, and you can never count out Maryland, and you can never count out Kathy Reese. This is a team, Megan Whittle was the all-time goals leader for Maryland, and she graduated last spring. But they're going to have Jen Giles and Carolyn Steele, and they still have Megan Taylor as their goalie. They have loads of talent. They have one of the top recruiting classes every single year. It's just kind of systemic dominance they have in that Big Ten conference, and they make the Final Four every single year. So, I mean, how can you count this Maryland team out? I can't. That's why I still have them in my top three. Looking at number two, I have North Carolina. I think Katie Hogue and Jamie Ortega, and this North Carolina offense is just loaded with talent. They are losing Marie McCool, who was one of the best players in women's lacrosse last season, a two-time Tewaratin finalist. But it's not going to affect them too much. I think Jamie Ortega, I actually have her as a Tewaratin finalist. We'll get to that in a little bit. A center each talent. She's the all-time leading scorer in Long Island high schools. Had a terrific freshman year and really turn things on as the season went on. Katie Hogue is just as good as her. I mean, first team All-American type talent, another Long Island girl. And then like Kara Clages is another person I think will have a good year. And Taylor Moreno, of course, the goalie. I wrote a feature on her at Final Four weekend last year for College Cross. She played six different sports in high school, including football. I mean, she as a kicker, and she was a goalie in soccer, goalie in lacrosse, and she might be the most talented. She's not as proven as someone like Julia LaSella at Colorado, but as far as talent goes, I don't think anyone's more talented a goalie in women's lacrosse as Taylor Moreno. So behind those tools, North Carolina, they should make the Final Four. And if they don't, I know that program will consider it a disappointment. And then number one, to nobody's surprise, I have the BC Eagles. behind Sam Apuso, the reigning Tuareg Ton winner, behind Dempsey Arsenal, one of the most versatile midfielders in the country, and behind the return of Kenzie Kent, who 2 years ago was named the most outstanding player in the NCAA tournament of women's lacrosse. Behind those big three, and they have other star players too, but when you have three first-team All-Americans, as well as Elizabeth Miller, one of the best defenders in the country, Boston College is going to be right there, and they are the team to beat. And it'll really be interesting to see how teams can stop them. I think the way to beat BC is you have to match them on the draw, and you simply have to outscore them, because there's not going to be a lot of slowing down that offense this year. If they have a weak point, it is the goalie, it is the defense. And beyond that, this team doesn't have a lot of holes. In midfield and on attack, Boston College is as strong as they come. If you don't know much about women's lacrosse, Sam Apuso is basically, if you had T.D. Erlin and Michael Sowers, or one of the top attackers in men's lacrosse, just combined in one player, that's who that's who Sam Apuso is. She's so dominant in the draw circle, and she was second in the country in points last year. So, yeah, that wraps up my top 20. I think BC is going to be tough to beat on top of that list.
All right, and then we'll now turn our attention to the Tuareg Ton race, and as you were saying with Boston College, with the big three like that, it's safe to say that the women's Tuareg Ton road runs through Chestnut Hill.
It does. It really does. And if you said Chestnut Hill. Yeah, I thought you said Chapel Hill for a second.
Nope, Chestnut Hill.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. So yeah, it's going to be Chestnut Hill and Chapel Hill, number one and two in women's lacrosse this year. But yeah, I mean, Sam Apuso, barring injury, she will be a finalist for the Tuareg Ton. She's just too talented not to be. I think either one of Jamie Ortega and Katie Hogue in North Carolina, whoever ends up racking the better points totals, will probably be a second Tuareg Ton finalist. Maryland almost always has a player in there, so Jen Giles is probably my third finalist. I think Selena Lasota at Northwestern is my fourth. And then the fifth finalist, you know, it could be Kenzie Kent. It could be a second Boston College player. It could be Taryn Miller. Yeah, I don't know. Depending on what Kyla Sears and Zoe Belladeau do, depending on what Libby Rosenzweig does on Loyola, Kelly Larkin at Navy. Actually, no, that's who I'm going to go with. Yeah, I'll have Kelly Larkin as my fifth Tuareg Ton finalist. So if I'll go Apuso, Ortega, Giles, Lasota, and Larkin as my five Tuareg Ton finalists. And if I were to pick a winner right now, not seeing any of the games, I'd go with Sam Apuso. And I think she's the most electric player in the country. She'll probably score about 140 points. Win about 65% of her draws. Just unreal stats. And especially if Boston College makes it to the title game again, I think she'll probably win the Tuareg Ton again.
Yeah, and two, with Apuso, if you have a draw specialist that could also outrun you and score and have that ability, it's a game changer that just electrifies the whole game.
I can't tell you how many times last year I'd see her win the draw to herself and then just like sprint down the heart of the defense, dodge and score, just all in 7 seconds.
Yeah, when you
all by herself.
Yeah, when you have a player like that, that just completely game changes the sport. It's must see television, and I think Apuso is definitely why Boston College has become a real quick fan favorite in the women's lacrosse game, and really has been the face of the new rules and everything. You know, with two new, going up and coming and making it to two national title games. You know, Maryland and UNC have always been consistently very good, but I think Boston College and Stony Brook as well have been the two big benefactors of the women's lacrosse rules revolution of the past 5 years or so.
I can see that too, and I think
not to diminish James Madison, of course, exactly. With them pulling off a championship last year too. But I think in terms of the casual fan, I think BC and SBU have really been the ones that have reaped in the casual fans.
I think the most entertaining teams to watch are probably over the last couple of years are certainly those two, Stony Brook and Boston College, and seeing those teams go at each other in the NCAA quarterfinal last year, it was. Number one, I mean, it was one of the best played women's lacrosse games I've ever seen. And number two, it was just a shame to get that team, that game in the quarterfinals, where BC and Stony Brook were number one and number two in the polls all year long, and somehow they were the 4 and 5 seeds when the NCAA tournament came around. That was questionable, but aesthetically, those two teams just play beautiful offensive lacrosse. Taryn Ullmiller and Sam Apuso are going to be a couple of the top players in the country again this year. So if you're tuning into women's lacrosse, those are two teams I'd suggest. North Carolina has a ton of star power. And then looking down the list, I already mentioned how Northwestern has that run-and-gun offense, really high scoring. Virginia Tech, I think, is going to be really entertaining. Yeah, you know, it's an exciting season to be a women's lacrosse fan. Mm-hmm. And opening day is actually going to be 1 week later than men's opening day.
Hey, the women are smarter than the men!
Slightly warmer on February 8th than February 1st. But
yeah, that's why we're going to have a second part to the podcast next week, because we still got another week to go. So
we will. So we should release that. That'll probably be released maybe day of opening day, but mm-hmm.
We're gonna have an old friend
hopefully before scheduled the season starts.
Yeah, we're scheduled to have an old friend come by,
and then we're trying to get some very special guest speakers. Mm-hmm. But we'll see on that. But so, a lot of potential for some good shows next. Yes. A good show next week. Yeah, mm-hmm.
But we'll definitely keep you guys posted on that, and don't worry, it's not gonna be two dudes talking about women's lacrosse again. We're making a point to have a wide variety of voices. It just so happened that with this
yes
week. I know
I'll try to not be pure McGuire and just
yeah,
and act like they don't know about the sport. Yeah,
yeah, no, Sky, no. Yeah, Skylar's you know, our head guy in terms of the women's lacrosse beat, and we're kind of leaving these podcasts up to him to, because it's his bread and butter, and we don't want to step upon him. I'm just here to help host it and provide some support and all the recording and all of that. But our women, we're going to do some more women's shows this year, and Skylar's going to be the man on point to help organize and do all that and run his wheelhouse, and we'll help fund the support and the platform. But before we wrap up with today's episode, let's get your Final Four, because everyone's probably, after all that, wanting to get a Final Four. I'll go with mine real quick. I think BC, Maryland, and UNC are pretty clear Final Four teams, so I'll go with those three. The interesting point is going to be that fourth team, because I think the NCAA Women's Lacrosse Tournament has really opened up in prior years, and is, I think, more than the men's tournament, has lent itself to some more variety in upsets and everything, at least in the first and second rounds. It kind of evens itself out by the Final Four, but then you look at last year and James Madison, and you know, threw a wrench in that a bit. And you've seen some teams get to that, too. So I think maybe Northwestern or Princeton return to glory, like somewhere in that, you know, 7 to 10 range, one of those teams, maybe right. Virginia Tech. Because I think with those three teams, they don't necessarily have the talent of the top six, but they have the game-breaking ability to do so if they have, you know, that any given weekend mentality. So I could see someone in that 7 to 10 range, maybe even a Syracuse or a Penn get to that point, or even a Loyola. So I know I'm going to be flaky with the fourth team, but I'll say someone in that, be on the lookout for someone in that 7 to 10 range to play spoiler. And I don't think they'll necessarily be seeded 7 to 10, because I think that'll be tough for a 7 seed to be the 2. Mm-hmm. But if they're ranked six and they get a three seed, if let's say Maryland or UNC get knocked down a peg or two into the 4-5 game due to a couple losses or something, look out. So I think someone, whoever gets the six seed, yeah, might be the team that could turn some heads come May. But in terms of the national title game, yeah, BC's stacked. They're the super team of women's lacrosse this year. Just imagine you're returning all that talent, and then you're getting another key cog back after a year of playing women's hockey, and she proved herself when she was playing lacrosse prior to that to be a complete stud. Yeah, it's going to be tough to beat BC. They're the Golden State Warriors of women's lacrosse this year with that star power. And I think the Eagles get that national title. I think that they're motivated by the fact that they lost the last two title games, and they're going to go into the title game guns a-blazing and looking to finish the deal. So Boston College will be your new women's lacrosse overlords over Maryland in the title game, I think.
I'm going to go a little bit interesting here. I think I've got BC and North Carolina. I think they'll both make it into the Final Four. I think this might finally be the year that Maryland is upset prior to the Final Four. I think they're just a little bit shorter on the star talent they've had in the past. And I think the rest of the NCAA has caught up to them. So I'll go Boston College, North Carolina, Florida, and Virginia Tech.
Ooh,
that's going to be my
that
final
is interesting.
And Virginia Tech is kind of my dark horse pick to make a run through to the Final Four. And then in the title game, I'll go Boston College and North Carolina. And I'll pick BC, I guess. I wanted to pick North Carolina. I wanted to do something. But at this point, I can't pick against Boston College. On paper, on narrative, on everything, on star power, they're just head and heels above the rest of the country.
Yeah, and so yeah, to wrap things up,
I can see them losing. I can see them losing, and I think North Carolina is certainly the team to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Maryland could do it. I think Stony Brook could do it. I think Florida could do it. But at the end of the day, if I'm to pick one team to win it all, I've got to go Boston College at this point.
I guess real quick thing to wrap up with Boston College, at least on paper before the season, probably the most dominant looking team since one of the Northwestern Dynasty years, maybe? At least on paper. Or do you think that North Carolina is a little too close to them to throw that?
No, maybe I might go Taylor Cummings senior season. I might not go.
Yeah,
that
the Taylor Cummings. Yeah, the Taylor Cummings Maryland years is a good point too.
I might go back to that. As far as dominance, now I think this BC team head to head with any of those past teams, I think this is going to be the greatest team of all time. But as far as because I think the sport as a whole is stronger than it's ever been now.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah,
so I don't know if the gap between one and two is the biggest it's ever been.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is like BC on paper looks like the most powerful team, but at the same token, the gap's closed so much in women's lacrosse, and we see it every year.
Exactly.
That it's, you know, it's kind of crazy how we've gone from a sport where you could pencil in Maryland or Northwestern every year just, what, 7 years ago, if that, to now everyone in the, from like first through 30, if you could throw in a kind of in a tight lock with it, you know, where, yeah, you have a top six tier, but then anyone could beat anyone on any given Saturday. It's crazy how quickly that's happened in women's lacrosse from going from
and,
era
you know,
dominance.
I don't think BC is going to go undefeated because they're probably going to have to play North Carolina three times. And we didn't really mention that before, but these two teams playing in the same conference, they're going to play in the regular season. They're probably going to play in the ACC title game. And then they'll probably play at the Final Four, too. So whenever you have two teams that and I know the IL poll had North Carolina is 3 and Maryland is 2. I'm pretty confident in my stance. I think North Carolina is the second best team in the country. And just seeing those three teams go at it three times this year, I'm going to be watching every minute of all three of those games because it's must watch. You know, it's Duke, Virginia, and men's basketball right now. It's just two great teams in the same conference, a great rivalry. And yeah, I mean, the narrative is on Boston College's side where they've been the runners up 2 years ago. They kind of surprised everyone, made it all the way to the Final Four. Last year, they had that huge win against Stony Brook. They had that huge win against Maryland. And then they lost to James Madison. So, I mean, it seemed like they really should have won last year, too. So, finally, Sam Raposo's senior year seems like it's all coming to this. And we'll see if they can get it done.
All righty. So, once again, as we said, Skylar will be having some more podcasts throughout the season to keep you up to date on the NCAA women's lacrosse scene. And as we said, what we call in this business a tease. Next week, we're going to have part two of our season preview, and you guys are all in. You guys and gals are all in for a treat next week. So follow us along. College_cross is collegecross and collegecross.com. Log on, get all your lacrosse news and information. Skylar's laptop is back in business, and thus we'll be back to pumping out some good old content for us on the women's side. And you can follow me at RyanMcD29.
You can follow me at Skylar J. Gilbert.
And as always, check us out at college_cross, as we said before. We're also on Facebook and Instagram for all your news and analysis, and of course the memes. But for once again, thank you for listening, and we hope to be giving you some more women's lacrosse goodies throughout the season with Skylar. So thank you for hopping on board once again, Skylar.
And my pleasure.
We'll catch
you next week.
Yeah, see you next week for part two of our NCAA women's lacrosse season preview. And of course, stay hydrated.